Gnanjanashala kaya chakshurvan militam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha vanchakopa turubhishcha kripasindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhar srivastri gaura bhaktavinda hare krishna 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 hari 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 rama 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 hari hari hare krishna So, by the kindness of Naikatma Prabhu, who allowing me to speak this morning, I've been in L.A. for some days and I'm leaving this evening, so he's given me the opportunity to give class this morning. And it's a very good morning this morning, being the last day of the Srila Prabhupada Marathon, so I was happy to speak about Srila Prabhupada today and Srila Prabhupada's books. Also being the last day of the year, so it was a nice way to end the year, is discussing Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada's mercy upon all of us. I've been living in England near Bhaktivedanta Manor for the last almost 6 years now. So the winters there can be very cloudy, dark, rainy, foggy. So I thought I would come here to get some sun. So, of course, I came in time for all your storms here in Los Angeles and came out this morning from Marina Del Rey and I couldn't see 10 feet in front of me, which was also very interesting because that's their existence in the material world. You can't see anything. Huh? That's what we say every morning, to ask for the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, the spiritual master, so that we can see properly. Because otherwise, everything is just a big fog in the material world. We can't see except through the eyes of a pure devotee, through the eyes of Shastra. So at this time, I know so many devotees here all over the world, here in New Dwarka, all over in India, all in Europe. I know at Bhaktivedanta Manor, they take these marathons very, very seriously as a time to distribute Prabhupada's books. And, of course, that's the purpose of distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, is so that everyone can see clearly, so we don't have to see this through this fog. Like it says, the spiritual master, the pure devotee, he's described as transparent via media. So that means he sees everything clearly. He sees directly from Krishna. We know that. Here when Srila Prabhupada was here, those famous sentences with Rameshwar, when Prabhupada said that he talks to Krishna, when he said to the reporter how God talks to his pure devotee. And of course the reporter, whenever someone says they speak with God, you know, that sends up a red flag. So he was pursued that line of questioning, and Prabhupada said yes. He said that when one is pure, that Krishna could directly communicate. So Rameshwar, he put in his fog. That's it, interpretation. You know, that's what it means, to interpret, add something. So he said, well, what he means, and he tried to explain it in a nice philosophical way, that when we see through the eyes of Shastra and we understand, and that's communicating with Krishna. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, Krishna speaks to the pure devotee. So this is what we have with Srila Prabhupada. And of course, in distributing Srila Prabhupada's books and reading Srila Prabhupada's books, this was Prabhupada's offering to the whole world. And I happen to be here at several times. New Dwarka is a very wonderful place. Devotees living here in this community know there's a great history of Prabhupada, Krishna consciousness here in the New Dwarka community. And from rather early on, I first came here in 1972, in May, and I was Brahmachari in New Vrindavan at the time. And we drove in a van, about a half a dozen of us, with Kirtanananda and a bunch of young boys. And I was came here to get Brahman initiation from Srila Prabhupada, we traveled almost 3,000 miles, and it took, I don't know, 5 or 6 days in a van with no windows. But no one ever minded. It didn't matter because we were getting to see Srila Prabhupada. That was the most wonderful thing. And so this was May of 1971. And a lot of interesting things happened all around Srila Prabhupada's books, and particularly Prabhupada's Krishna book. We know at that time, if you know the original Krishna book, that was, as we would say, that was a maha big book. It wasn't just the size of a Bhagavatam, but it was the size of like a letter piece of paper, you know, I don't know how, but it was the biggest book that's, you know, was ever produced. It was actually distributed. And at that time, it was Krishna book volume 1. And, of course, again, there weren't so many books then. There was just first canto, second canto was coming out of Srimad Bhagavatam. There was no Chaitanya Charitamrita. There was Bhagavad Gita. And it wasn't the As It Is, the Macmillan version. It was a smaller one. And of course, all the devotees were reading Krishna book. We were hearing about Krishna for the first time back then by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So it was very exciting reading. You would read a story literally for the first time and hear about Krishna interacting with all of his associates, the cowherd boys, the gopis, the demons. And I was reading it regularly. I used to read it at lunchtime every day in New Vrindavan. While the devotees ate lunch, I read Krishna book then. So anyway, when I came here, as I've mentioned so many times, I got to read Krishna book to Srila Prabhupada in his garden, which is right there. This very wonderful place. Again, you know, you're so fortunate here in New Dwarka, and you always have to understand and appreciate that good fortune. That little garden there, which is a few hundred square feet, Prabhupada said it was his favorite place in the world, that garden. And he used to sit there every afternoon. When we were here in May, each afternoon at 5 o'clock or so, Prabhupada would come down the stairs, go out the back door there, and go over to the garden. And the garden wasn't so elaborate or crowded with things. There was no fountain in there at the time. There was a nice lawn and, of course, many plants around. Banana trees were there and a lot of tulsi plants. And Prabhupada would just sit there and he would chant. And there would only be 6-8 devotees in there, Kurandar. And at that time, when I was there, of course, Kirtanananda was there and a few of his boys, his just young brahmacharis, got to come in. And Prabhupada said it was his favorite place in the whole world. He said because Tulsi was there. He said so it was Vrindavan. He said that place was Vrindavan because Tulsi was there. So this is Prabhupada's garden here. But he actually liked this garden so much that even we know in Mayapur, they have the Lotus Building in Mayapur. So when that was completed in Prabhupada's quarters, which were on the second floor, Prabhupada would go up to the roof, and sometimes he would walk around on the roof of the Lotus Building. Now there's rooms up there where Jayapataka Maharaj has his rooms. At that time, there were two places, him and Bhavananda Maharaj, they just had rooms. But Prabhupada would walk around on the open roof there, and he told Jayapataka, he said, I want you to make a garden here. He said, just like the garden in Los Angeles. So Prabhupada didn't just say this was his favorite place. This was his favorite place. New Dwarka, we know, is the world headquarters for ISKCON in the 1970s. This was where everything was going on. But amongst all the places, Prabhupada liked that garden so much, and he asked them to duplicate the garden on the roof of Mayapur, which meant bringing in a lot of soil up to the roof and planting things. But Prabhupada was so happy sitting in that garden. And as it turned out, a few things. I would read Krishna book to Srila Prabhupada in his garden. And at the time I was 20 years old. And I didn't, of course, none of us comprehended being around Srila Prabhupada at that time. what it was. That's why we didn't keep notes. We were just busy serving, giving everything to Prabhupada, because he was giving us Krishna. So we had everything, and we were just happily serving Prabhupada night and day. But to sit there and read to him these stories, I never got the impression that Prabhupada had even written this book. This was Prabhupada's book. All these books, they were Prabhupada's. But we would just sit there in the grass and read, and Prabhupada would sit there, and he was more as eager as we were to learn about Krishna. Prabhupada was more eager to hear these stories. He would sit there and he would be completely absorbed in just listening. And like, you couldn't always, you know, we never knew what Prabhupada was thinking. We don't even know what we're thinking ourselves sometimes. It goes on so quickly in the mind. But you could see Prabhupada sitting there and listening to this book. And not with that he was the author of this book, but he was hearing about Krishna, and he was happy. And I found that out one day when, in reading, and I was reading about Krishna killing a demon, which for me was always the favorite stories as a young boy. You always enjoy the fighting and the blood. There's lots of blood and guts. So I was reading this story, and Krishna beheaded this demon, and Prabhupada just started laughing out loud. We're all just sitting there listening, you know, trying to focus our minds. But Prabhupada was just right there. And when he heard this happen, this point in the story, Prabhupada just started laughing and laughing. And Prabhupada, he had different degrees of laughter. And, of course, the maximum was when you slap your knee. We say that in this country, right? A knee slapper, you know. And Prabhupada starts slapping his leg, and he's laughing and laughing. So then all the devotees started laughing because Prabhupada was laughing. You know. We were enjoying, but we didn't enjoy with the level that Srila Prabhupada did, hearing about his Lord and friend Krishna. So Prabhupada started laughing and laughing and slapping his leg. And then he just looked at us, and there's just a few of us there. And he said, "I like the Cowherd Boys very much." And we were all, you know, again, young boys in there. We just become so happy, you know. But to see Prabhupada listening from the Shastra, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto Krishna book, but with no feeling that Prabhupada had written this book. And he said that on a plane once. He was reading Bhagavad Gita, and Prajumna and I were sitting next to him. Prajumna, of course, was his Sanskrit editor throughout the years when Prabhupada was here. And he looked and he said, "Who reads their own books?" He was reading Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he said, "Who do you know? What author reads his own books?" And of course, when Prabhupada would ask a question, you would always just, you know, didn't know what to say immediately necessarily. You know? And we just looked and he said, "No author reads his own books." I'm going, "Yes, Prabhupada." He said, "An author," he said, "they read other people's books." He said, "But they don't read their own books." He said, "After it's done," he said, "they never want to see it again." He said, "But here I am reading Bhagavad Gita as it is." And then again he looked at us and he said, "Why?" And we're he said, "Because these aren't my words." He said, "They're Krishna's words." So this is the importance of course, what we're doing as followers of Srila Prabhupada, is we're distributing Prabhupada's books, but they're not his books. Prabhupada did say they were his. They're Krishna's books. And at that time in 1971, actually this book distribution was just beginning. It was beginning here on the West Coast, in particular Los Angeles and San Francisco. And these were the books, very big books, this Krishna book. And I remember being from New Vrindavan. Anyway, they had arrangements that devotees could come, and we would go out. We started going out on Sankirtan, and this was the first time that I went out on book distribution, other than being on Harinam and holding BTGs in your hand. And if someone was kind enough to, you know, take one from your outstretched hand and give you 25 cents or something, you'd be happy, you know. So now these were books, and Kirtananda made us go out, and they gave us a certain spot. I don't know where it was, somewhere around here. We all had certain spots in L.A. We were allowed to go out and distribute books. But we didn't go out in the street. We went door to door with Krishna books. At least this is what we were doing. And it was myself and my godbrother, Yadavananda. And we were brahmacharis, dressed, shave head, tilak, everything. And we just went down, up and down this one street, and they were like row homes. I remember big row homes. And knocking on doors, and people would open the door, and you just say, hi. Hare Krishna. Would you be interested? And you would show them this Krishna book. And amazingly, we actually distributed books in this fashion in those days. And I can remember, this was 1971, 1972. And sometimes you would go to a house where people like hippie types. And, of course, they'd invite you right into the home. And all you had to do was open up a Krishna book and start showing them the pictures in the Krishna book. And they would become so excited to see these pictures. And then you would open up to the page with George Harrison's, so George Harrison produced this book, and that was it. They would take a book, invite you to sit down and do any number of things, and then you would just go to the next house. But this was the beginning of book distribution. And then that was May of 1972, and then my next time was I was with Srila Prabhupada. This was September. Now it's October of 1972, and by Krishna's mercy, by Prabhupada's mercy, I was his personal servant. And then again, Prabhupada was traveling to Vrindavan, and he stopped from New Vrindavan. He went to Dallas, and then again he was in Los Angeles. So now book distribution devotees were distributing books, and big numbers. And here at the time, of course, there was a brahmachari. His name was Rameshwar. And he was one of the, as we know, one of the keys in really pushing book distribution. And it was in those days when he would just there, at the end of the day, as devotees were distributing books each day, he would come in and at the bottom of the stairs, and he would just have a list of the devotees' names and how many books were distributed and how much was collected. And he would come and wait, and I would come and see him. And so sometimes he would just call up the numbers to Srila Prabhupada. And sometimes Prabhupada wouldn't call him up the stairs, and he would come up and tell Srila Prabhupada how many books had been distributed. So Prabhupada, of course, he became ecstatic hearing about these books being distributed, because these books... this is the sun, this is what dissipates that darkness, dissipates the fog of material life. It's what gives us Krishna through the words of the pure devotee. Krishna is right there in these books. So many stories. We know all the stories in book distribution. Prabhupada said just by getting the book, he says, one becomes completely freed. Just if you just hand them the book. When I was with... in 73, then we went on, we wound up in Mayapur later on in 73, and Prabhupada visited his godbrother, Sridhar Maharaj, at the time, who wasn't he wasn't feeling so well. And so Prabhupada went to Navadvipa, and we went to his mutt, and he had his bed, Indian-style bed, twine bed, and was just outside on the patio, concrete patio. So he was sitting up in bed, and we came, and they gave Prabhupada a chair, and I sat on the floor next to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada started off speaking in English. He wasn't speaking in Bengali, and it was just Sridhar Maharaj and his disciples and Prabhupada and me. There wasn't anyone else there, but Prabhupada was speaking in English to him. So I was sitting on the floor next to Prabhupada, and as soon as he sat down, Prabhupada started telling him about how Krishna consciousness was being spread in the West. And Prabhupada was very enthusiastic to tell him about everything that was going on. And he said, there's so many temples, and he says, and I have so many disciples now in the West, and they're distributing these books. He said they're distributing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. He said thousands of books. So when he went there, he started telling Sridhar Maharaj about his book distribution in the West, that this is what was going on, that these disciples, my disciples, these Westerners, you know, as Prabhupada said, these young boys and girls, American boys and girls, they're distributing thousands of my books. He says, and they're getting good money for them, he said. They're selling them for $10, he says, they get for a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, $10, and he looked at me and he says, isn't that right, Shruti Kirti? You know? I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, not that they're having to be given away. He said, people are paying for them. He says, they want these things. He says, and they're willing to pay. So Prabhupada was really excited and to tell, you know, his godbrother that this is what was going on, that this is what his spiritual master wanted, and now he was carrying this out in the West. He said, but I have so many disciples, he said, in so many temples in the West. He said, and he said, I don't even have time to travel to all these places to train these devotees. And he said, if you want, he said, you can come to the West, he said, and help me. Prabhupada was so wonderful. He said, you come to the West and you can help me. He said, train. He said, you're a very expert devotee. He said, you can help them. Go to any temple you want. He said, we have temples in Los Angeles and Chicago and Detroit and New York. He said, and if you come, he said, I'll give you all facility. He said, and Shruti Kirti, he'll be your servant. And he said, isn't that right, Shruti Kirti? And I'm like, yes, Prabhupada. And Sridhar Maharaj, he just smiled. He said, maybe next life. And then they started speaking in Bengali. So, of course, that was a very interesting conversation. And it was a year ago at the manor, Prabhupada's appearance day, disappearance day, Hari Sari was there. And we were both speaking in Prabhupada's room at his quarters in the manor. And I told that story. And Hari Sari looked at me, he said, that's amazing. He said, Prabhupada did the same thing. He said, when I was with him. He said, we were in Vrindavan, he said, or in Mayapur, and he went to see Sridhar Maharaj. He said, and he did the same thing, and he told him, come to the West and give you all facility. And, of course, when Hari Sari heard it, he thought that was very unusual. Prabhupada was inviting his godbrothers to come and get involved. And unlike me, after it was done, Hari Sari went back into the room and he said, Prabhupada, he said, you know, you just asked Sridhar Maharaj to come and help you, you know, in your society. And he said, I don't understand, why. And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, well, and Prabhupada told him a story. And he said, you remember, he said, this was like 1935. He said, when my Guru Maharaj was in Bombay, and he said, it was at this time, and Prabhupada talks about parts of this story, Prabhupada mentioned so many times, because he would talk about how his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was going to open a temple in Bombay. He said, then as soon as they started discussing this temple, all his disciples, different disciples, they were already fighting over what rooms they were going to get in this temple, you know, who was going to be situated in this room, that room. And Prabhupada always quoted that and say, my Guru Maharaj said, better to sell the marble for this temple and print books and distribute books. So this is what Prabhupada was always most important to Prabhupada, was distributing books to bring people to Krishna consciousness. He said, but also, he said, is what happened, he said, my spiritual master, he called me. And I went and sat before him and he said to me, he said, Sridhar Maharaj, he understands Vaishnava philosophy very well. He said, but he's very shy. He said, so you encourage him to go to the West. So whenever Prabhupada saw Sridhar Maharaj, every time he saw him, he followed the instruction of his spiritual master, and he told him, you go to the West and preach. So every time he saw him, that's all Prabhupada could do, which this is perfection of a disciple, is following the orders of your spiritual master. It wasn't that Prabhupada needed any assistance. We all know from the very beginning, Prabhupada did everything on his own. Even sometimes with the opposition of his own god brothers, creating difficulties, Prabhupada still was able to do everything because he was completely surrendered, completely pure devotee and surrendered to Krishna and his spiritual master. And he spread Krishna consciousness, as we know, all over the world. You know, I traveled with Prabhupada 5 times around the world and got to see Prabhupada in each center as he was just completely absorbed in making devotees and training devotees in Krishna consciousness. But because that was the order of his Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada always encouraged him to come and help somehow help in Krishna consciousness and spread. But and again, this is what was so wonderful with Srila Prabhupada, and this is why his disciples, as I said from the beginning, is all anyone wanted to do was to help Srila Prabhupada because of what he had given. Prabhupada had this loyalty to his disciples in Krishna consciousness. And the only thing required for Prabhupada's followers is to remain loyal to Srila Prabhupada. There's one letter. It's a very wonderful letter. It's the only letter of Prabhupada's that I put in the back of my book. And in that letter, Prabhupada says, "Don't make a faction." And that's the title on it. It says, "Don't make a faction." But this was a letter to Tushtakrishna. It was Tushtakrishna Maharaj at the time. And this was also in January 1973, which was also right around this time. Prabhupada was working day and night, you know, translating here, giving us these books. So Tushtakrishna, he was running a temple, managing the temple in Auckland, New Zealand. And he was struggling. And he was connected with Siddha Swarup Goswami. And he was very attracted to him. And many, if you know the history of Siddha Swarup, he came along. He was already practicing Kundalini Yoga. He had many followers. He surrendered to Prabhupada and brought all his followers with him. And then as time went by, 73, 74, 75, this was the faction. This was our first faction in ISKCON. It wasn't after Prabhupada left. It was while Prabhupada was here. So these things were going on even while Srila Prabhupada was here. But Prabhupada wanted to train Siddha very nicely, had him travel with him. But things broke down at different times. And Siddha, he didn't want to manage the temple anymore in Auckland. And he wrote Prabhupada, there was three letters Prabhupada responded to at once as he was traveling. So, and he mentioned each letter. He said, thank you for your letters and he mentions all the dates. And then Prabhupada, in these letters, he asked Prabhupada different questions. And Prabhupada answered each and every question, which is the duty of the spiritual master, Prabhupada would say, to answer all of your questions. So he answered each and every question in the order that they were asked. Prabhupada was so transcendental. He didn't assign that this one was more important, this one was less important. But just as he asked the question, Prabhupada answered them. So the first thing Prabhupada says in his response was, "So I see that you want to leave the temple in New Zealand." And Prabhupada said, "If you want to," he said, "then it's all right." He said, "How can I refuse?" He said, "Devotional service is voluntary." He said, "But if you leave," he said, "I don't know how it will go on." So Prabhupada made his request, which is also Prabhupada's compassion. It's how he would sometimes instruct his disciples, with a request rather than an order. Because if he gave an order and you don't follow, then that's a very great offense. What Prabhupada said, "If you do it, I don't know how the temple would go on." So without making an order, Prabhupada let him know how important it was for him to manage the temple. But he gave him the ability not to do it without making a big offense. He was saying he wanted to live on a farm in Australia. And then he answered more questions. And one of them, he talked about being associating with a pure devotee. And Prabhupada said, yes, he said, we should associate with pure devotees. He said, but I think you have a wrong understanding of pure devotee. And Prabhupada said, why do you think that just Siddha Swarup is pure devotee? He said, Siddha Swarup is a very nice boy. He said, but all my disciples, he said, that are following sincerely, they're all pure devotees. He said, not just Siddha Swarup. He said, also Asiddha Swarup is pure devotee. He said, Siddha Swarup is a pure devotee. He said, but non-Siddha Swarup is also pure devotee. He said, why are you just wanting to listen to this one person? He said, all of my disciples they're following, they're to be seen as pure devotees. He said, they may be Siddha Swarup or they may be non-Siddha Swarup. And again, he said, all of my disciples, they're pure devotees. He said, Siddha Swarup, he said, he is a pure devotee. He said, and you also are pure devotee. All of my disciples, he said, who are sincere, he said, they will go back home, back to Godhead. He said, not just Siddha Swarup. He said, why do you want to be in the spiritual world with just Siddha Swarup? He said, Siddha Swarup, he will go back to Godhead. He said, and you will go back to Godhead. He said, and Shyama Sundar, who was Prabhupada's secretary taking the dictation, he said, and Shyama Sundar, he will go. He said, all of my disciples will go back to Godhead. And then he said, everyone will go except Mr. Nair. Mr. Nair, of course, that's a big, big history. He was the one who sold the land in Juhu, was Mr. Nair. He said, so he said, he must stay. So, and then he asked another question, and he said, yes. He said, if my disciple doesn't go back to Godhead in this life, he said, then I must come back, he said, to bring him back in the next life. He said, so you must be very careful, he said, to finish your business in this lifetime. So this is the meaning of relationship between spiritual master and disciple. This is the meaning of loyalty. This was Prabhupada's loyalty and is Srila Prabhupada's loyalty to his followers. He's guaranteed, if you just remain faithful to Srila Prabhupada, it'll take us back home, back to Godhead. He said, the whole ISKCON, he said, will be there in the spiritual world, and this whole ISKCON society. So we have to perfect what we do here so that we can live peacefully in the spiritual world together. And that's what he said. Everyone will go, he said, except Mr. Nair. So this is the commitment that Srila Prabhupada has made to his followers. As we come in here every day and we greet the deities, and when you come into the temple, first thing you see is Srila Prabhupada. He has a relationship with everyone, all of his followers in the society, not just that his disciples. Everyone's coming in and offering their obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. Everyone's doing Guru Puja every day to Srila Prabhupada. So he's connected with everyone in this ISKCON society. And the only requirement is that we remain faithful to Srila Prabhupada. He's Prabhupada's pure devotee. He's already made his commitment to all of us to bring us back home, back to Godhead, by following his instructions, by reading these books that he gave us, by reading very carefully everything. Distribute them and read them, Prabhupada would say. But for us, we're the only one that will break that relationship. Prabhupada never broke a relationship with his followers, with his disciples. But we can break that relationship by giving up our desire to remain loyal to Srila Prabhupada. So on this day, it was a very special day. We always have to remember, just remain committed to Srila Prabhupada. Everything else is taken care of. Prabhupada, he brought Krishna consciousness to the whole world. Even Prabhupada, when I was with him in 75, again, Prabhupada came through Los Angeles And then he went on that South American. He went to Mexico City, he went to Caracas, and then Miami, Atlanta. It was a very wonderful tour. And everywhere Prabhupada went, he saw hundreds of devotees. And in each temple, in the course of a few weeks, Prabhupada was in ecstasy. He was visibly in ecstasy in every place he was going, just seeing the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He spoke about it. If you look in his lectures, you'll see as he arrived in every temple, Prabhupada was overwhelmed to see Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. In Caracas, he said, they've traveled very far to be here. He said, such a long way to be here, to come to you. But it was Prabhupada that brought them there who traveled so far. At that age, as I travel now, I'm 57 years old, and I do these, I've been traveling a lot in the last few years. And I think, how did Prabhupada do it? You know, I mean, literally, you see everyone, our God brothers, you know, they'll take a month and stay at this place and stay at this place or recuperate. You know, every year now, every 6 months, everyone finds some place they have to go and recuperate. Prabhupada never took a holiday, as they would say in England, never took that vacation. I was listening to a lecture yesterday. Prabhupada was in Fiji at the opening of the Krishna Kaliya temple. It was 1976. And he's telling them, so you've established this wonderful temple here. Thank you very much. He said, now it is up to you to take care of the deities. He said, I'll come here as often as I can. Many times he said, I'll come here. He said, but I'm always traveling. He said, so I won't be able to spend much time here. This is in 1976. Prabhupada's 80 years old. And all he was thinking was, he's just going to keep going around and around and around until he leaves. He never had any idea of retiring from anything. That was his retirement. We took sannyasi, he retired from his family life, that was it. Then it was just spread Krishna consciousness all over the world as his spiritual master wanted, and as he was so empowered to do, to give us Krishna. So Prabhupada, as he was traveling, was seeing hundreds of devotees. 10 years Prabhupada spent, now it's 1975, 10 years traveling around the world, giving everyone Krishna. And he saw the results. People were chanting in every town and village. And Prabhupada was overwhelmed in ecstasy going around. So now we're so fortunate. Everywhere we have association of devotees because of Srila Prabhupada. We don't have to go to a place that's hell because there's no Vaishnavas there. Everywhere we go, there's devotees, followers of Srila Prabhupada. So this is all the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So this day, especially the end of the Prabhupada Marathon, we can all be very happy for what Srila Prabhupada has given us and the ability to assist him in his mission, remain loyal to him, so he can take us all back home, back to Godhead. So thank you very much. I think it's time to stop if there are any questions or comments. Yes. Sukadev Prabhu. Sukadev, he was my temple president in Hawaii. And back in 1974.
So normally there is you know, a lot of mercy when Prabhupada gives you the rose, and sometimes there's more mercy when he gives you the thunderbolt. So what was the heaviest thunderbolt that Prabhupada ever gave you?
Gave me?
Yes.
He was a rose. I always say it. When I especially travel, like in Russia and Eastern Europe now, sometimes devotees will say, here the Prabhupada was very heavy. And sometimes they'll say Prabhupada was very strict. And And I laugh. I say, I was with Prabhupada 2.5 years as his servant. And in 2.5 years, he yelled at me like thunderbolt 4 or 5 times in 2.5 years. I say, but I've seen other devotees who he would yell at 4 or 5 times in one day, you know. Even in one session, in one sitting, you know, you could get that kind of yelling. But it wasn't because I was good. It was because I didn't like him. He knew I didn't, you know, I would be crushed when Prabhupada yelled at me. You know, all of them were incidental and just, you know, looking back. And I appreciate them all now because that's, you know, I have the most vivid memories of when he yelled at me. You know, those things you remember. So many things you can forget, but you don't forget when he yelled at you. You know, he took care. But even they were so sweet how he did it. One of them was here in Los Angeles, one of the early ones. I guess, you know, it's hard to say. I'll tell you, I guess the heaviest because it was the most embarrassing for me because it was in front of everyone. That was, you know, the one that I found the most difficult because it was in Vrindavan. I was only with Prabhupada now for a few weeks, and Prabhupada just arrived at Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan. It was for the 1 month he stayed there for Kartik and did the Nectar of Devotion classes. And it was really the first time Prabhupada yelled at me. And what had happened was Prabhupada was in the courtyard sitting on a little dais. And this is 1972, so it's all this rented equipment there in Vrindavan, speakers. And it was my first time outside of America. And now I'm in Radha Damodar Temple with Prabhupada. And I'm his servant, I'm a brahmachari. And this was the first big festival in India, 1972. It's October 1972, and there's maybe 40 devotees from all over USA and Europe. This is where we were all from, England. So many from England and the rest from America. And there were maybe 40 devotees there. And Prabhupada in the afternoon, late afternoon, he would speak from Nectar of Devotion. And I was recording on this Grundig or Ur tape player. It was a big reel-to-reel thing. It weighed like, I don't know, 10 pounds or something. Big metal thing. And so Prabhupada was sitting on the seat and I was there and I had, you know, set up the microphone and all. Now this is in Vrindavan, which is very, very beautiful. And at this time of the day, the sun's setting, you know, the monkeys are all getting back into their little habitat for the evening, chattering. And you see the parrots flying, you know, these green parrots, you know, Vrindadevi's parrots flying 2x2, always 2x2, you know, flying back into the trees. So it's just this amazing setting in Radha Damodar. But there were flies, you know. Flies were also there. So I'm standing next to Prabhupada and I have Chamara fan. And Prabhupada's speaking from Nectar of Devotion. And Prajumna would read and then Prabhupada would stop him and make comments. And I'm fanning Prabhupada. But, you know, I have the Chamara fan. So I'm trying to keep the flies away, but I'm trying to do it in a, you know, in a nice, you know, way. So I'm fanning like this. And I'm not conscious really what's going on, just fanning. And Prabhupada's speaking. And he's like, there's these flies right around his head. So as he's speaking and he's going like this, you know, because flies bothering him. And I'm still just going like this, you know. And then he did that one too many times, you know. And he just, and this is on the loudspeakers, you know, 5-foot-high speakers. And we're in a room that's no bigger than this outside. It's in the courtyard, and there's all my God brothers and God sisters. Everyone's there. And Prabhupada just looks and he shouts, "Get someone up here with some intelligence." And I was like, I look like this, the Statue of Liberty now, you know, and I'm just like this. And my heart stopped, you know. And there's this one brahmachari. He was British brahmachari. And he was a big, tall guy. And he was a very eccentric fellow. Let's just say that. He was known to be eccentric, you know. And he came And I'm just standing there. And he comes and he grabs the fan off me. And I went and I sat back down in front of the tape recorder. And I put my head into the tape and started playing with the dials like I was doing something, you know, because I was just so shaken. And I'm playing. And he gets this fan, you know, and it's, he didn't do it like I. He just gets it and starts going like this, you know. I mean, I could feel the wind where I was sitting, you know. And Prabhupada just went on speaking. I mean, he chastised me, he yelled, that's all he said, and then he just kept talking, you know. So now he's speaking again from Nectar of Devotion, and this boy's like this, and I'm like, this guy's crazy, you know. I'm thinking, sitting there, still trying to redeem myself, you know. And he's like, and Prabhupada looked, and he went like that. And then I was like, so then I just, you know. So you, when Prabhupada would chastise you, you would understand what it meant to be that, you know, 1/10,000th part, the tip of a hair, in front of everyone, you know. It was like I just crushed my false ego so much. So I don't remember anything else. Sitting there, and I just kept my head down and kept playing with the buttons on the tape recorder. And then after class, Prabhupada got up, and, you know, I would always have to get his chatter, get his glasses, do this. And all I remember was, it was probably the one time like I didn't walk next to him as he was walking back to his room at Radha Damodar. I was like 10 feet behind him. Like I couldn't even walk next to him. I was like just so devastated, you know. I'm walking behind him and one brahmachari came up to me and he said, oh, he said, Shrutakirti, he said, you're so fortunate, he said, be able to be chastised like that by Prabhupada, you know. And I just went, yeah. I didn't feel it at the time. I still didn't feel it at the time. I was just, but then there were a few other times. But that one really stood out. You know, some wonderful ones. Yeah. But now I relish all of them. I would, you know, like we say, give anything for Prabhupada to just blast me, you know, all the time.
Do you remember one more?
Is it okay? Sorry, we have time? Okay, one more. I'll tell you the one I liked the most when he chastised me. Now we go back to where I'm staying, that Bhaktivedanta Manor, which I live 5 minutes from Bhaktivedanta Manor, the temple that George Harrison donated to the devotees in England outside of London. So now I'm with Prabhupada for a year. This is August of 1973. And in fact, yeah, it was Janmashtami, which is when I became his servant, was a Janmashtami festival in New Vrindavan. So now it's Janmashtami time, and we're in England. So I was, you know, I knew everything I was doing as Prabhupada's servant. I could use the cooker. You're familiar with the cooker. I was good at the cooker, giving massage. Everything was fine. So Prabhupada's quarters in the manor, it was a nice big room and a nice leaded glass windows overlooking, you know, the front lawn of the manor is very pretty. And at that time, the sun, it was a wonderful summer and it just was sunny every day. And Prabhupada, he would take his massage right in front of the windows. And it was on a wooden floor. It was a nice wood floor. And I would just come in and put down the straw mat and give Prabhupada his gumcha. We would both have just little red gumchas on, you know, put our gumcha. And Prabhupada would sit down, very simple, on the floor on his mat. And I had a little bottle of sandalwood, Mysore sandalwood oil, and then a little, like, pint bottle of mustard oil, which massage his head with sandalwood oil for 15 minutes or until he went like that. And you'd be sitting behind him, and then he'd go like that, and then you'd move to the next part of his body. And that's how, what Prabhupada would do. And then when he would go, then you move to the next part. You never stopped until he told you. It was very, being with Prabhupada, you did exactly what he wanted you to do. And during massage, you massaged as he told me once, because after a while, I even started to assume massaging him. So I would massage, and then I went to the next spot, and then I went to the next spot, figuring that was the right amount of time. And he let me do it for like 3 days. And then after 3 days, I was rubbing his head and rubbing. And I took my hands off. And he said, you massage until I tell you to stop, not until you tell you to stop. So I was like, so that was the massage. That was Prabhupada's, you know, Prabhupada liked the massage. And sometimes it would be 2 hours. And he would tell me, you can massage my back as hard as you want. Which I was young, say sinewy, we say. I was strong. I was thin, but I was strong. And I would really massage Prabhupada's back, you know. And that was his, like, favorite. And he would let you massage his back sometimes for, like, 45 minutes. And he said, as hard as you want. So you would have to put, you know, he didn't like, you just did putter around, you know, like he said. He told me once, he said, you know, anyone can massage, but it's not how he was. Like he said, Tamale said, massage like a girl, you know. So, and another person, their hands were sandpapery, so he didn't like that. And if your hands sweat, you couldn't massage them. So he was, you had to be just, everything had to be just right, you know. So somehow or other, my hands didn't sweat and they were soft and I was strong. So I'd rub his back. And no matter, and when he said that, as hard as you want, I thought, all right, I'm going to massage him so hard. I was so, you know, foolish. I'm going to massage him so hard, he's going to say, well, that's, you don't have to do it any harder than that. But he never, ever said it. You know, no matter how hard I massage, and he would just sit there on the floor like, you know, Prabhupada wasn't tall. He was, you know, he didn't weigh a lot. He was, you know, but he would just sit there completely relaxed. And you'd push and push, but you never moved. You couldn't move him either. Now he was like, he was a guru. He was heavy, you know. So no matter how hard you pressed, he never said to me, oh, no, that's, he would just sit there and enjoy it, you know. And in the meantime, you would get really tired massaging, and then I would even massage harder, thinking maybe he doesn't know I'm still behind him massaging. Like I've got to let him know I'm still here pushing, you know. And I'd like push even more, and he just liked it. So that day, I massaged Prabhupada's head with the sandalwood oil because he said keep a cool head, and sandalwood is cooling, so keep a cool head. And then you pour a little mustard oil into your palm like that. You massage Prabhupada, yes? No? And then you get the muscle. And then just start massaging his back. So now I'm rubbing his back. And again, I'm with Prabhupada for a year. There's no one else in the room. So I'm just going about, you know, doing my thing, massaging, rubbing and rubbing, rubbing. And then I finished his, you know, goes like this. So now it means to move to the side. So, and I get up to move to the side. So as I start walking beside him, I knocked over the bottle of mustard oil, which was on the floor, which I didn't put the cap on, which he would always say, put the cap back on. Prabhupada noticed everything, you know, didn't miss any. So I move to the side, and a bottle of mustard oil falls over. So before I can do anything, Prabhupada's yelling, and he's saying, you fool! He said, you'll be intelligent when you're 80. And he's yelling. And, like, immediately I just, you know, again, like, I'm just in total anxiety, freaked out. I'm crushed. He's yelling at me. And he said, go get a cup. And he just, and I think it's probably the only time I ever left the room without even paying obeisances. Like, I was just so freaked out. So I ran out of the room, and I come back with this katori, you know, metal, stainless steel katori. And he's just sitting there on the floor, and there's this big puddle of oil on the floor, and now the bottle's standing up. And he said, and I'm just standing there not knowing anything, you know, and he's there, and he said, do what I'm doing. And I put the cup down, and Prabhupada sticks his hand right in the oil, just like that, and starts scraping it into the cup, you know. So I'm sitting beside him, and now it's completely quiet. You know, that was it. There's not another word now said. And Prabhupada's putting his hand in. It's going like this. So I'm putting my hand next to Prabhupada where it's splatting the oil, you know, and scraping it off of the wooden floor, you know. And so somehow or other, most of the oil, all the oil, you know, just a little shiny now on the floor, but all the oil's in the cup. And then he just looked at me. He said, massage me with that oil. And then I'm like, ah. Oh. And I didn't know whether, you know, that was like the really, you know, to rub salt into it. Now, like, now I have to massage him with the oil that I took off the floor. It's got little, you know, pebbles and you know, little dust things in it and everything. So now I'm next to Prabhupada and I'm put the oil and I'm rubbing and I'm having to pick little things out of his skin as I'm rubbing so I don't scratch him. And Prabhupada just sitting. And if you know, Prabhupada could just sit like he was just in another world. You didn't know where he was, you know. Like, I didn't know what he was thinking, but as all I know is I'm just very unhappy now, you know, very upset. And I'm massaging him, and he's just sitting. And I kept massaging. Now, I've always had a very warped mind. So I can't just say, Prabhupada, I'm very sorry. I'll never do that again. I'll put the cap. You know, I should have just said something like that. You know, please forgive me for being such a fool, and you know, make sure I don't do that again. I should have put the cap on. Just something. But like, I never even thought of saying that. Is all I could think, because I become, when I get yelled at, I just go blank. You know, like, I just don't know what to do. You know, I become speechless. You know, not that I become callous, but I become. I just lose it. So now I'm just massaging him, and I'm completely freaked out, and I'm thinking what to do, you know. And Prabhupada's not saying a word. And as far as I can see, he's very upset, and there's like this dark cloud over us, you know. And I'm massaging, and then, you know, he goes, not saying anything, and then I go to the other side, and then I'm massaging his legs. Now I'm right in front of him. And the whole time I'm thinking, what do I say? You know, and I just have ringing in my head, you fool, you'll be intelligent when you're 80. It's just ringing in my ears constantly. You know, that's all I heard, the last thing he said to me. And he's not looking at me, he's not doing anything. So now I'm on his feet. And, you know, I have an idea what I'm going to do, and it's getting the courage to do it. And I'm rubbing his feet now, and it's the last chance, you know, to say something. And I'm looking at him, and I said, Prabhupada. And like, he just like looked. And I said, thank you very much. I said, I thought it would take a lot longer for me to become intelligent. And Prabhupada started laughing and laughing and laughing. And he starts slapping his leg like this. And he just laughed and laughed and laughed. And then he looked at me, and he had a big smile on his face, and he said, yes, he said, when we were children, he said, whenever anyone did anything foolish or did something stupid, we would say, you'll be intelligent when you're 80. He said, so I've used that on you. So I turned it around and turned it into a blessing that I would become intelligent when I was 80. By the mercy. So he loved it, you know. So that was, instead of apologizing, I turned it into just a little witty comment. And so I was 22 years old at the time. So now I'm 57. So I have 23 more years to stay in this body. And then, so that was my favorite chastisement, you know, because Prabhupada gave me a blessing at that time to become intelligent. So. It was a joke, but to me, I take it very seriously. All right. So, I think it's time we have to stop here this morning. I'd like to thank everyone for being here, allowing me to speak. Again, my God brothers, especially God sisters. And I hope to see you again. And just remain loyal to Srila Prabhupada. Everything else will be all right. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.